Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of Syosset Library. This is Barney Leventino, and I am happy today to welcome Ace Atkins, best-selling author. And Mr. Atkins is here today to discuss his latest in the Quinn Coulson series, The Revelators. Welcome, Mr. Atkins. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Barney. Great to be here.
Let me start off with a confession. And this is book 10 in the Quinn Coulson series, and I confess that I am new to the series. I had not had an opportunity to read any of the books prior. And I always go into it with a little trepidation when I'm picking up a series well into it, because a couple of things happen. There's always backstory going on, which I understand, but sometimes what happens is authors tend to try to fill in a lot of the blanks of the backstory, and it kind of distracts from the story that they're telling at that point. And happily, you did not do that. You told your story.
I'm glad to hear it.
It was fascinating. And in point of fact, I finished this. I just picked up book one this morning, so I'll get back to the beginning.
Thank you.
Interesting story. There's a lot going on in your fictional corner of rural Mississippi. We've got elements of racism, political corruption, extremist militia, gun running, sex trafficking. It's a real garden spot. So,
yeah, I don't know where I get my ideas. Nothing like that happens in America.
Well, yeah, amazingly so. You know, you hardly find any of that in the paper nowadays. When you created Tippahaw County, am I pronouncing it correctly?
That's right.
Okay. When you created that venue, did you anticipate or do you envision creating a place that would really give you the opportunity to explore such a variety of themes in your works?
Well, I hope so. I never intended to write something what I'd call a regional book. I didn't want to write something that only appeals to people in my, you know, corner of the state or something like that. You know, and I go back to that great Faulkner quote, which is, you know, to understand the world, you must first understand a place like Mississippi. And a lot of those issues you're talking about as far as hypocrisy and racism and corruption, you know, we're on the forefront right there. There's a lot of issues going on, you know, 100 years ago, and there's a lot of issues going on today. It gives me as an author endless material to explore, to talk about, themes to go back to, and things to explore. I just wish that, you know, knowing when I started 10 years ago, I never imagined it increasing. I never imagined some of the nastiness getting worse. I really thought 10 years ago we were kind of in a new South that was kind of emerging from the past, but unfortunately there's a lot of people who want to return to a South that in truth never existed. And that's what the whole series is about. It's really about, you know, either moving ahead or going backwards, and that's kind of where we are in this country.
Your protagonist, Quinn Coulson, former Army Ranger, sheriff, all around tough guy, connoisseur of fine cigars, good whiskey. But he's surrounded in these books by really, really strong women. I mean, across the board, the women that we meet are in their own way tough characters. Even to the down to his nephew's first girlfriend, who in her own way is a tough little girl. It seems like without those tough women around him, the stories really would be kind of your run-of-the-mill cop with a gun kind of story.
I agree completely, and I think that, you know, we have no shortage of those kind of male-driven stories where, you know, that it's all about the man and being the protagonist and the hero. You know, the books are called a Quinn Coulson novel, and I think that just keeps readers to be attuned and tracking towards what the series is. But the series is a lot broader than that, and it's not, Quinn shares the space. They're just not supporting characters that are in the story, but actually are equally share the time with Quinn on the page. And those include his mother, that includes his tough sister, Caddy. That involves one of my favorite characters, a woman named Lily Virgil, who's a U.S. Marshal. And, you know, it's not a conscious effort on my part. It's not like something I went out and tried to make a statement on. It's just, you know, the women in the books, I think, reflect women that I know in the South. You know, we have no shortage of problems down here, but we don't have a shortage of some really tough, interesting women. And also, I used to be a newspaper reporter years ago, and I got to know a lot of just fascinating women that worked in law enforcement. And mm-hmm. I think I'm just using those experiences into the books now.
You touched on it earlier as we were starting to talk about the themes in the book, and a big element in this story is the concept you're talking about, racism, immigration issues, and obviously you were writing this book before the latest explosion of awareness, I suppose would be the word, to racial attitudes and racial injustices. I mean, hopefully now we're seeing some significant changes across the country. I mean, the Washington Redskins are finally changing their name. So attitudes are changing nationwide. Do you think that those attitudinal changes are trickling down to these small corners of rural America that you write about?
Well, I would hope that they were. I mean, you know, we just got to see, which is something I am just never thought I'd see in my lifetime, which is the Mississippi state flag finally removed the Confederacy, the battle flag of the Confederacy, the last state to do so in the South. You know, I never thought I would see that. Just today, where I live in Oxford, Mississippi, is the home of the University of Mississippi. They just took down the Confederate monument that has been this cornerstone of the entire university. So ideas, things are changing. You know, is it changing? I think the current times, the current administration and current attitudes have really opened up Pandora's box nationwide. And I think when I was growing up, I don't think it was a idyllic place to live in the South, but I think people that harbored these views were hesitant to be so open about them. I think they mm-hmm. feared for their jobs. They feared for their standing in the community. And they knew that this was a time after civil rights, that this was not the way things worked anymore. But man, how does the pendulum swing back? And the pendulum has come back full force right now. You know, whether, you know, I'm writing these books, I hope I am in another 10 years. I hope we're in a better time. But I never thought when I first started this book 10 years ago, these stories, that things would be so overt as they are right now. But it's but I like to see at least some progress is getting made, and that's a good thing. And but there has definitely been an opening up. I'll tell you this short anecdote is when I first started writing these books with Quinn Colson, it was a very basic story. I wasn't sure if it was going to be a series yet or what I was doing. Is Quinn Colson returned home from war? I mean, he's not a special forces guy or anything like that. He just was in the army, comes home, and he finds his hometown overrun with this racist militia group. And when I created this group, it was kind of overly stylized. It was kind of like some bad guys you'd see in a biker movie or something like that. And I thought, mm-hmm. maybe I'm a little far-fetched on this. Maybe this is a little too much. And, you know, last week I look out of my window in my office and there's some guys marching around the Confederate statue, you know, in full paramilitary gear. And so I hate to say it, but it's like, you know, the world that I'm writing about is I wish it wasn't that authentic, but it's moving closer to nonfiction as the days go by.
Yeah, actually, it brings me to one of the next points I had noted. We talked about racism and immigration, and then you also have you've got these neo-Confederate militiamen who play a prominent role in this story. And from where I'm sitting in a fairly liberal corner of Long Island up in New York, it seems not real to us to think that there are these militia guys that are out there looking to go back to the ways of the Confederacy. And you know, you're touching it, you're looking out your window, and the question from up here is if the attitudes that we're talking about are changing, I mean, is this real in terms of these militia guys? Is this a real fear that we need to have, and how do we address that, and where do we go?
Well, I think that in short, I'll tell you a little anecdote. Again, going back to when I was a newspaper reporter, there were these people around in Florida when I covered crime, and there was, you know, we'd get a press release that, you know, the guys were meeting up at the front of the police station to, you know, neo-Nazis or, you know, KKK or whatever these, you know, hate groups are that are banding together. And our viewpoint at that time at the newspaper, and was pretty an accepted policy, is we don't give them coverage. And we don't go take a picture of the KKK or neo-Nazis walking around, because that's what they want. And I think that the news cycle has changed so much that now we're putting them on television and we're giving them credibility. And, you know, we had a bunch of jerks coming around here, marching around the Confederate statue, and people take pictures of them, they put them online, and it gives them legitimacy. And, you know, not only from a newspaper standpoint or a news standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint, I think the strongest thing we can do is either turn our backs to them or make fun of them. And I tend to try to make them have a little fun with them and inject a little humor in the books. But to give them validity makes them go stronger. But do I think that they are a legitimate force down here? No, I do not. I do not. I'm embarrassed that they're here. I'm embarrassed that they exist. But are they normal? No.
Good. That's actually, I will throw out also that the I kind of manage our local history collection up here. And there was, believe it or not, in the I guess in the early mid 20s up here on Long Island, there's actually a significant Klan presence.
Oh yeah,
which most of our residents are not aware of, but it was. But they're thankfully gone now as well.
I have heard.
Another major element of and component to these characters is faith. Most of them are Christian, which comes through in a lot of the characters and what they're saying. Some of the characters find, you know, comfort in their religion. Others are wielding religion as a weapon, which I guess is also commonplace in life. How does faith fit into the society that you write about?
Well, you know, I don't necessarily, or I don't have an agenda when I'm writing this stuff. My personal views, sitting around and we're talking about it, I'm a little bit more jaded in that capacity. I am, as a reporter, I've just seen too many stories come across the wire as far as people who've been funneling money, dishonesty, people that are hypocrites, there's a mammoth amount of hypocrisy surrounding evangelicals in the South. And so I've got a very jaded view towards that. And I think really what the creation of a character like Quinn's sister Caddy was kind of trying to do something that was the opposite of that. I think it was a little bit easier to create a charlatan because we've seen that character over and over again. And let's face it, there's a million of them in real life. Mm-hmm. But I thought, would it be interesting if there really was a character who really did the right thing and really tried to live this path of helping the poor and helping the underprivileged and working and giving their entire life. And I have another character describing Caddy Colson as being a cross between Mother Teresa and Loretta Lynn. I think that's kind of where, you know, where she is. But I thought it was really, as a writer, it wasn't necessarily any kind of agenda that I had as a writer. Like I said, I'm a, you know, kind of coming from more of a hard-boiled storyteller standpoint. But I thought, wouldn't it be interesting, instead of having the charlatan character, if you really had somebody who did this stuff, really wanted people to get along, really wanted to help people that were less fortunate, really gave their life to helping others and not enriching themselves. And so that's where she came about. But of course, I can't write about the South authentically in a place where every block is a church, you know, and right. It's just a huge part of the culture here.
I mentioned some of the characters using religion kind of as a weapon. Maybe that's the wrong word, but I'm thinking of Skinner, your local political boss, who, again, coming at it from my perspective, towards a later book in the series, I didn't know him before this. He makes lots of comments on morality and seems to be somewhat judgmental in terms of how people should be comporting themselves. Yet at the same time, he is, I guess, both a cause and a symptom of the local political corruption. And he has a bit of an epiphany along the way. But I think the way I'm taking it from coming at it where I am now is that he kind of sees himself as, well, he's trying to do good, but if he lines his pockets along the way, there's really not so much wrong with that. And the question really I'm going to ask is whether, is that necessarily, or is that kind of what is really ailing our politics in terms of corruption? Do we have people that are fundamentally good people, but kind of lose their way and can't resist the temptation to maybe make a buck or two along the way, or is it much deeper than that?
I think it's being very kind even to think that some of these people are decent people but are kind of led astray. I probably have a much harder view. I mean, I think if people get anything from these books, I hope they're entertained and I hope they get some laughs of some things, but also I hope there's, you know, some thoughtful discussion on this, which I appreciate you bringing up. We're seeing too much of this, people making excuses for what I would call, you know, immorality 101, you know, immorality, you know, what's bad, lying, greed, you know, just overall nastiness. You think about, you know, I don't want to get, you know, off too far, but, you know, we have the president who represents, you know, so many of those traits. And I think that now people are just making excuses for that kind of behavior that, you know, well, it's okay to do that if we get this out of it, or I'll follow that, but that's not that bad. And I think our moral compass as people or as Americans is just been busted and thrown on the side of the highway. And, you know, if anything, I think that, you know, reading about characters or watching characters in movies that try to stand up and do the right thing, I think that's important right now. I think about one of my favorite films, High Noon. And I think about, you know, what that movie is really about the writers being blacklisted in Hollywood. And I think about Will Cain walking down that street and just trying to be a decent person, and nobody will stand up and do the right thing. And I find that even more cowardly, I think, than some of the people doing the wrong thing, is the people who make excuses for not standing up and saying, you know what, this is wrong. This is not the way we want to live. This is not the kind of leadership we want. And unfortunately, there are a lot of those town people. I think you watch High Noon today and it seems about as modern as it gets.
Yeah, I don't mean to give our listeners the impression that this is, you know, your book is political in that sense. It's not, but obviously these are themes and undercurrents that come through, which I think is also what makes the story real and what makes it a little bit more interesting than just straight let's tell a story with no basis in reality. So it makes it interesting, and it's, again, not to belabor the political aspect of it. It's not that. Switching gears a little bit, you also, in addition to writing this series, you've been writing continuations of Robert B. Parker's Spencer series. How is it for you as a writer, switching gears and switching hats, going from rural Mississippi to urban Boston?
Well, after 10 years, I've finally been able to kind of speak both languages. I can go between the two. And that's really the trickiest thing is getting the difference of style. But it's been a lot of fun for me, I have to say. I mean, I spend a lot of time in Boston. Unfortunately, with the pandemic, I normally would be up in Boston right now doing research and hanging out. But there, you know, there's a lot of things that are, I can find very similar about the South, some very similarities. But of course, writing about Boston is a brand new canvas and all types of different and new people. And that's fun for me to write about. And certainly a character like Spencer, who I've just been, you know, I've enjoyed my whole life, and really how I got into creating a character like Quinn Colson, which is creating a strong moral hero. And that's who Spencer is. So. That's actually what I'm working on right now. It's a new Spencer.
You mentioned the pandemic. It was another question, and I've been asking authors this lately when I'm speaking to them. How, in the midst of this, we're seeing sickness, death, economic hardship beyond what anybody even could have remotely imagined just, you know, 5, 6, 7 months ago. How does that impact you as a writer? Do you find it motivating to get going and creating more? Is it slowing you down? How does it impact you as a writer?
Probably a little bit of all the above. I am very fortunate to make a living with a typewriter or a laptop, and to sit down where I don't have to leave my house. And I'm kind of a hermit by nature anyway. I mean, that's one of the reasons I think I became a writer is so I didn't have to go to an office. I can just sit here and work. Unfortunately, so many of my friends are affected by this, people that are in the book business, people in the restaurant business, people that, my buddies that are musicians, they can't get gigs. So it's hard not to be affected by it. It's hard not to get down sometimes. Everybody gets up in the morning and, goes to the New York Times, the Washington Post, see what's going on in our world. And it's hard not to get down about it. What I've tried to do is use my writing for the same purpose that I hope readers are doing, which is a form of escapism. And so during this period when I'm writing Spencer, there's no pandemic in Boston right now. And it's happening, last year. And so I don't think about it. And it is a nice form of escapism. And hopefully, I think that's why the book business is still going strong, is people need a little escapism right now. We can't go to the movies. We can't do certain things. We've got to be smart and stay safe and practice wearing masks and social distancing. So sometimes the book's the best form of entertainment these days. And, so I try to, as a writer, use that as an exercise and taking a little trip away from where I am.
Okay, thanks. So this book tied up a lot of loose ends for Quinn. Where does he go from here?
Well, if I'm talking to my editor, I say, I know exactly where I'm going. I know exactly what I'm doing, but I'll tell you a secret, Barney. I have no idea. No, I've got a little idea. I really had the idea to change up a lot of the way that the books, as far as what was happening in the books, some things that finally had to come to a head. There were certain things that could not go on forever and keep the readers interested. I really wanted to show them with the book that anything is on the table. Nobody is spared. Nothing is safe. Anything you think that can't happen, it might happen. And that's what this book is, a final payoff for that. But I do have a view of this rural county, and it might include the pandemic. I mean, this is something, if I'm addressing what's happening in America with politics and race and I've got to, in religion, I've got to address this happening right now. I don't know what that's going to be like. I don't know if that's a side story. I think we're going to have to get some perspective on it come at the end of the year. And hopefully this will be a blip in our history, and hopefully we'll be moving on very quickly. I hope that for everybody.
Okay. Well, Ace Atkins, thank you so much for joining us today. I love the book. The book is The Revelators. It is available here at Syosset Library, as are Mr. Atkins' other books. And as I mentioned to you, I'm back to book one in the Quinn series, and I will catch up in a little bit. Again, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure, and hope to speak to you down the road.
Hey, great. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. And on that note, we will turn the page on this chapter of the Syosset Library podcast. Thank you, everyone.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.